wonderful experience these past 3 years. And thank you to Kevin Uderman, my thesis director, and Mark Posidas, who's of course on another continent, but here in spirit, and Elisa High, and then Ethel and Gail, and all the other professors I took here, and to my family and friends. This is the last section of an essay called Boat Stories, Three Generations. When I was in my early teens, my dad, my sisters, and I decided to canoe all the way across Beach Fork Lake in Lavalette, West Virginia, an undertaking we knew would take a day of paddling in the blistering August heat. Maybe my dad was thinking fondly of the time he and his brother Mike had boated all the way across the Ohio River, imagining their old sunken rowboat still rusting away on the riverbed. But my sisters and I hadn't yet heard that story. We just wanted to do it. We had often put on our heavy nylon life jackets and canoed for a couple of miles along the lake's shady perimeter, enjoying the wildlife we could view best from a silent resting place out on the water. From our canoe, we had watched a red and black water snake thread across the brown rippling surface, and a mother turkey and her little flock peck in the tall grass along the water's edge. But we wanted to go further, see more. We wanted to get in the canoe and actually go somewhere, the Beach Fork campground on the other side of the lake. We'd driven to the campground before, but not often. For our weekend hikes and fishing trips, we stuck to a section of the state park close to our home, climbing the steep trails and casting from a boat dock far across the lake from the bustling campgrounds, RVs, and bathhouses. But every summer, Grandpa's side of the family has a reunion at the campground, and we wend our way down winding, washed-out trailer-lined roads to eat fried chicken and casseroles under a picnic shelter. When we get to those reunions, I sit on a bench in the heat with a can of Coke, too nauseous from the drive-in to listen to my elderly relatives tell stories around the picnic tables, but I understand why we hold the reunions where we do. Several decades before the state government bought the land for the park and created a lake for flood control, a piece of that land was Grandpa's family's farm. A few reunions ago, after we threw away our plastic plates and cutlery, my sisters, my dad, and I piled into Grandpa's sedan and rode past the RVs to the part of the lake where the farm used to be. "If you look real hard over there," Grandpa said, pointing along the lake shore to a patch of briars and trees, "you can still see one of the trees from our old apple orchard." He stared at an overgrown tree I couldn't quite make out, seeing tiny rows of fruit trees and a few half-ripe apples on the mown grass, knocked from their branches by a thunderstorm. Then we climbed back into the car, and Grandpa drove us down a gravel road to the weedy cemetery where our ancestors lie. Before the state government flooded river water over the farms, filling the valleys between the oak and maple-covered hills, workers exhumed the bodies buried here and there under little clumps of family headstones. They reburied the old coffins in a local cemetery beyond the water's reach, gathering the land's deceased inhabitants in an underground reunion of their own. Now, it's difficult to tell which of the mossy slabs of marble have rested there since the 1800s and which migrated to the plot in the 1970s. My sisters and I wandered through the graveyard, trying to keep our flip-flops from disappearing into the mud as Grandpa gave us the tour. He paused in front of his aunts and uncles' graves, stooping with a twig to knock soil and fallen leaves from their markers. The morning of the trip, a month after that year's reunion, my dad, my sisters, and I rose early to dig the life jackets, canvas flotation pillows, my dad's fishing pole, and the canoe paddles out of the building and pack a red igloo cooler with the heat survival menu I'd chosen. Root beer, bologna sandwiches, bottled water, and Snickers bars. Then the four of us carried the canoe down our backyard hill, where we hoisted the aluminum boat on top of our green minivan and lashed it to the luggage rack with red bungee cords. We drove to the marina, past goats, new vinyl-sided subdivisions, and trailer parks, and we carried the canoe down the concrete boat ramp into the water. We set off, pushing against the ramp with our paddles to gain momentum. My dad steered from the metal seat in the back of the boat. I paddled away up front, and the two younger girls settled against the cooler and the flotation pillows we used as the third and fourth seats. My sister scanned the hills for rare songbirds and deer and chatted quietly about boys. Our early hours in the lake were glorious. We paddled in the morning sun, paused in quiet coves to drink root beer, and fished for bluegill and sunfish. We untangled the hooks from pearly fish lips and let our catch flash back underwater to sulk between rocks in the lake bed. The lake meanders between the hills, so we couldn't see our destination as we floated across the water, and we reveled at first in the idea that we were questing without a map, uncertain of exactly how we'd find the campground. Each bend in the lake revealed new sights. Great blue herons in pterodactyl-like flight, and red and pink lilies, lonely survivors of flooded-out gardens. My dad let us take turns paddling from the rear seat, aiming the canoe for the setting of so many of Grandpa's stories. But as the day crept by, my sisters and I became aware of the intensifying heat, How much root beer we drunk, and how tight our youth-sized life jackets had grown since we bought them several years before. Still, we were out on the lake with our dad in the summer, and we had a goal to reach. We wanted to drift over the ground where Grandpa used to milk his father's cows, and we wanted to use the camping area's walled-in flush toilets instead of burying ourselves in a thick patch of weeds beside the lake, hoping to avoid the eyes of unseen anglers. We paddled on. By the third hour, we'd emptied the cooler of all liquids but a single bottle of water, our muscles ached, and the sun glared from its 1 p.m. perch. My sisters and I started trailing our fingers and long brown hair in the lake and asking how far we were from the toilets and pot machines. Gunshots interrupted our lining, louder and closer than the usual distant rumble of illegal hunters in the park. At least now we know where we are, my dad said, lowering his head and paddling faster from the back. We must be getting close to that firing range on the other side of the park. Ah! One of my sisters wailed, pointing to a row of bright orange signs on the shore, their metal poles tangled in ivy. We're going to get shot! Turn around, Daddy! Turn around! The signs, riddled with rifle shot, warned hikers, boaters, and fishermen they'd crossed in the dangerous proximity of the firing range. No, we've got to be almost at that campground. All you girls have to pee, right? Yes, we muttered, watching the woods for crazed men with rifles. Well, we're going to make it to those bathrooms. Paddle harder there, Beth! My sisters covered their heads with their sunburned hands, and my dad and I dug our paddles deep into the lake water and barreled past the signs. After a few minutes, the gunshots faded under the sounds of bird calls, cicadas, and motorboat engines. We were safe, but the campground was nowhere in sight. Every muscle-burning bend brought another stretch of brown water and trees. Finally, we floated under a place that looked familiar, a bridge on a road that led to the campground. My dad parked the canoe between the concrete pilings and scaled the hill, using his paddle as a walking stick. As he stood on the asphalt, looking for landmarks up and down the road, my sisters and I giggled at the lost explorer with his life jacket, yellow-tip paddle, and Marshall University ball cap. After a minute, he slid back down the hill, looking discouraged. Well, I was hoping I'd spot someplace with a payphone so we could call your mother and ask her to come rescue us, but there's nothing, and I haven't got a clue where we are, he said. You girls better pee under that bridge, and we'll turn around and head back. No, I insisted, cringing at the thought of the sharp rocks and the wad of now damp toilet paper I brought along in my pocket. Let's just go a little further. I took over the steering, and we paddled on, and after 5 minutes, a circle of RVs and a few rickety brown buildings glowed on the shore. We jumped out onto the bank and dragged the canoe up onto the grass. Then we threw our life jackets into the boat and ran for those brown buildings, elated. I could see a pop machine by the restroom door. A few minutes later, refreshed, cold cans of Pepsi in hand, my sisters and I walked more casually back to the canoe, feeling superior to the camper kids who were playing frisbee with their golden retrievers. We'd arrived by boat, after all, and they'd just come in their parents' trucks and RVs. Our dad waited by the canoe, already wearing his life jacket, looking grim. I didn't see a payphone, did you? Nope, we said. I ran back to the bathroom and looked around, just in case we'd missed it, but no phone. Let's get back in the canoe, my dad said, cracking open the can of Pepsi I brought him. We settled back under the metal seats and canvas cushions and paddled for the firing range.